Welcome to the ERB podcast, where we love to talk about books. At the ERB, we believe that life and faith is nurtured by the habit of reading. We've invited a diversity of writers, thinkers, and leaders to talk with us about the books they're reading, because reading matters, and so do great conversations. C. Christopher Smith is the founding editor of the Englewood Review of Books. Joel Wentz is our producer, and I'm your host, Jen Pollock-Michelle. Karen Stiller is the author of The Minister's Wife, a memoir of faith, doubt, friendship, loneliness, forgiveness, and more. Karen currently serves as a senior editor of the Canadian magazine Faith Today and moderates the Religion and Society series at the University of Toronto, a debate between leading atheists and theologians. Karen lives in Ottawa, Canada. Hi, Karen.
Hey, Jen. Thank you.
So fun to have someone north of the border for this conversation since I'm in Toronto. Alex, we're glad that you're here too, even though you're south of the border.
I'll hold up the south of the border side here.
Okay, good. Alex Joyner is the Eastern Shore District Superintendent of the United Methodist Church. He is the editor of Heartlands, a site exploring rural life and ministry. He is also the author of a number of books, including A Space for Peace in the Holy Land, Listening to Modern Israel and Palestine, as well as Hard Times Come Again No More, Suffering and Hope. Alex lives in Parksley, Virginia. So welcome, Alex.
Thanks, Jen. Great to be here.
It's so good to have you guys. I know you both are writers, which of course makes you readers. And as you know, this is a conversation where we just love to talk about books and how it informs our life of faith. Karen and Alex, I want to talk to both of you. Karen, I'll hear from you first just about your habits of reading, because I think sometimes that is just such an interesting question that I like to dig into. What do you like to read? Are there certain genres that you find yourself inclined to? Are there times of day that we would more likely find you with a book than others? Are you a Kindle reader? Are you, do you like books and paper? Tell us a little bit, Karen, about just your habits of reading.
Yeah, well, I feel really blessed as a writer when I read, because I tell this to writers all the time, that you get to get better at writing by doing the thing you love probably to do the most, which is mm-hmm. reading. Mm-hmm. So reading plays a huge part in my life, just as a person and as a Christ follower and as a writer. So I always have books on the go, usually more than one, sometimes more than three or four, like probably all of us. When I was at home, actually, with small children, you know, writing around their schedules, I had this weird thing, and if I could go back in time, I would change it, where I didn't allow myself to read during the day. I felt like this, I could not do that. But so I think I viewed reading different then. I think it was like this pleasure that I would only reserve for nighttime when my kids were put away for the day, but that's not the case anymore. So I read all the time. I read for my work, I read for my writing, and I read for my soul. You know, I read for my head and my heart, and almost always with a book I'm holding. If I'm doing like rough travel, which I sometimes do or have done for my work with stories that I've been writing, then I will take like a Kindle book, but typically I like to hold it in my hands and, you know, smell it and that kind of thing. So yeah, I'm just reading always.
Do you mark it up? I always think like that's an interesting, we could probably start a big lively debate here. Do you write in the margins of your books?
That is an excellent piercing question. I was at the festival, Calvin College Festival of Faith and Writing, a few years ago, and my roommates, who both, you know, women writers and of course readers, had highlighters, and they were highlighting the books they had bought. And I was actually shocked. And I was like, what are you doing? And they explained to me that they always highlighted their books. And it was like I was set free out of a prison. And it changed how I read from then on. So I'm holding up my highlighter. I always have a highlighter now, and I find it very freeing. So I'm less likely to write in the margins, and more likely to just mark passages.
I it depends on whatever's by my book. You know, sometimes it's a pen or a pencil, sometimes it's a highlighter. It's funny though, isn't it, how we have these kind of rules that we follow in our reading life, you know, maybe rules about the certain kinds of books we should be reading or how we should or should not mark up our books or what time of day we should or should not be reading. I find that really interesting in some of what you've shared, Karen. What about you, Alex? Tell us about your habits of reading.
Well, I try to do as much reading as I can through the day too, but I have two times that are the more prevalent times. I start every morning. A few years ago, I changed and went from being a night owl to being an early morning riser. I think I'm still a night owl, but I've forced myself into this new pattern. And so I try to get up about 5 o'clock in the morning and spend time writing and reading. And generally that kind of time I use for, well, there's always poetry involved. I've got a book of poetry always I'm working through and read a poem or two each morning. I do some, I don't know what to call it. I wouldn't call it devotional, spiritual, some of that kind of reading too, but also reading related to tradecraft in the church. That seems to be a good time for me to do that. And then in the evening at night when I'm going to bed, I usually like a fiction or a good nonfiction book that's may or may not be related to church life, but that's the other time of day that I try it. I really like a book too. I grew up with a father who was a clerk in a courthouse, so we always had books around, and books were treated with great respect, so you never wrote in the books. It's been very freeing for me to get over that too, and to be able to write and highlight and I usually try to review books. That's a lot of what Heartlands is. The website I've got is just doing book reviews of things that I've read. I'm also, I'm in, a few years ago, I wrote an article that I'm repenting for, saying that eBooks were the future and I didn't think I'd ever be reading print again. And it was changing life. I read much less on eBooks now and really have rediscovered the joy of paper. So
It seems like that's kind of the trend, you know, that initially everybody sort of thought, you know, paper books were going to disappear. And then we've seen an uptick in people buying actual real books. I think I'm sad right now in this just kind of quarantine moment that I can't get to my library. And so I am reading more books on my Kindle because I can borrow them from the library on my Kindle. But normally I'm a paper person as well.
I like the fact that you can highlight in electronic books too, mm-hmm. and have the notes saved at the end of it. But I'll take the book.
Yeah, I owe my library a lot of money right now, so I've been avoiding them. But I do love that trip to the library and the stack of books you bring home with you.
Do you have to go under an assumed name now? Or not?
I don't even go near it. Okay, apparently it's guilty, but I know I need to deal with it.
I have a way of just sort of reducing your feelings of guilt. I now just sort of think of my library finds as a subscription fee. You know, okay. I just pay kind of a monthly subscription fee. I'm actually getting a lot better. As soon as I signed up for notifications, email notifications when my books are due, I started to return them on time. But before that, I was just like, this is my subscription fee.
I like that. I'm going to adopt that.
Well, for both of you, you know, Karen, as the wife of someone who's been in ministry, and, you know, even though you talk about in your book, I like how you sort of kind of push against that idea that, you know, ministers' wives are like the two-for-one deal. Right. But certainly, you know, just being married to an Anglican priest means that you're very intimately involved in the life of ministry. And Alex, you're the superintendent of the Eastern Shore for the United Methodist Church, and you were talking about previous to our when we started the recording that you work with 49 different churches. You used to pastor your own church, so obviously you both have a lot of experience, a lot of intimate connection with the life of ministry, the life of a church congregation. And I was just curious, how do you see the role of reading in the life of ministry and in church life? And maybe Alex, we'll start with you this time. You know, do you, and maybe you can even talk about how you've seen that change throughout the years that you've been in ministry.
I don't think it's any less important than it was when I started. I think the kinds of books I have are different. I think for me, reading and ministry go hand in hand because it's a way for me to expand my understanding of the world. I'm only one person with one life experience. And so having the richness that's inside of books and the many ways that people see the world is very helpful to me in trying to develop how I think about the world, how people might hear things differently, different communication styles, different cultural experiences. So if I hadn't had that experience of being able to read from people who have a different experience than I do, that would be really, really limiting for me. But also reading has been, when I think back even to my call story, it always involves reading. For me, it was hearing one of my mentors in ministry read Annie Dillard's story about living like a weasel from Teaching a Stone to Talk that really opened the door for me to say, well, that's I hear God in that and to follow that call and that eventually led to ministry. So at every key moment, there's some text that goes along with it. So for me, God has really spoken through that. And also, just as Karen said earlier, you know, it's you really learn to write and sermons and other kinds of communication that you do in the pastoral role are really written acts. And so you become a better preacher by reading and learning that style of writing and your own style of writing. And I guess the other thing I'd say that has been really important is that reading also helps you be, if you do the right reading, it helps you be more honest about yourself and to really dig down to saying the things that you felt like you couldn't say or didn't have the words to say. But reading people like Mary Carr to me, you know, and her memoir work has been incredibly helpful to say there's something holy in that kind of gut level honesty that I want for me and I want for the people that I serve.
That's beautiful. You know, when you talk about a text sort of accompanying you at different points along your ministry journey and just your life journey, it reminds me of Eugene Peterson has, what is the book that's like an annotated bibliography of kind of all the books that have shaped his life? Do you guys know which one I'm talking about? Can't remember it.
Yeah, me neither.
We'll have to put it in the show notes if we can remember it, but there is something beautiful. I think a lot of times, sometimes people hear their life in terms of a musical soundtrack, but that sounds like just the way that you describe it. That's a reader talking, right? Your life in terms of the text at these various points. I think that's really beautiful. What about you, Karen? Just how reading informs your life of ministry?
Yeah, I love how Alex ended there talking about true stories resonating deeply. And I think for me, that has been the most important part of actually my life as a writer too, but reading in the life of the church, when we read the stories of other people who are, you know, as broken, to use that word, as honest, they are growing, they're through pain. We hear those honest stories and connect so deeply with them. And that for me has been really transformative. And I think for me, it started with Anne Lamott, actually. I remember reading Anne Lamott years ago and thinking, what? You get to be that honest? And it really changed, well, my spiritual path, I think, but also just how I am as a writer. And Mary Carr, definitely, I loved Lit and, you know, where she ends up at the end, exploring Catholicism and her faith. And so I think that to find ourselves in those true stories so well told is so important. So I've definitely seen that. I was thinking about, you know, the reading of scripture too. In the churches we've been in, it hasn't been the case of trying to
maybe sometimes convince people that there's more to read than just scripture. It's been more a case of trying to get people to read scripture, actually, I think. So that's interesting to me. And sometimes those other writers can lead us back to scripture, where, of course, we find our truest stories as well. So yeah, I love spiritual memoir. I again and again, I find myself in it. And poetry, also Alex mentioned, I have in the morning, I read from my Bible that's there by my, you know, where I have breakfast. And then I have Mary Oliver's collection devotions there in front of me. And I almost always start my day with the Mary Oliver poem as well. So that beautiful work of poetry in the church as well is such a gift. And
oh, that's wonderful. It's, you know, it's interesting to think about encouraging reading in the life of the people that we minister to, you know, in the life of a congregation. And I would love for you guys to speak to that as well. How do you encourage people to read scripture as well as to read other books? It's funny because I'm glad you brought that up, actually, Karen, that it's just true that we have to encourage people to read scripture. I was talking to my daughter about this recently, and but I was also thinking that creating the kinds of habits that enable us to sustain the habit of reading scripture, and I feel like just reading in general, you know, sustained reading helps us cultivate, as we cultivate that habit, it can transfer to the habit of reading scripture. I'd love for you guys to talk about how reading has been a part of your congregational life. And it's interesting too, I guess, maybe even to think about previously how we sort of talked about rules, right? The rules of what you read, you know, maybe you can speak to that if that's of interest to you as well. Alex, why don't you start us off there?
Yeah, I don't know that I intentionally started out trying to be in, to mess with the reading lives of the people that I was serving in, as a pastor, but it has definitely been there all along. And I've served in a number of different places. I've served in small local rural churches and was a campus minister at the University of Virginia for a while. And then here on the Eastern Shore of Virginia, had another more medium-sized church. But in every place, it seemed that I would get in a conversation and be sharing something that I was excited about reading, and having folks just kind of say, "Well, we, you know, let's have a study." So we would. One of the most memorable ones to me was early in my ministry. There was a series that I think Fortress put out called "Listening for God," and it was a collections of short stories with questions for small groups to use. And it was, you know, not overtly religious necessarily. I mean, I had a lot of Flannery O'Connor stories and Raymond Carver and things like that. But I remember that short story reading group as being a time that I realized that it was not just me who was interested in reading, but the people that I was sitting with could come alive, and something holy could happen when we sat around to talk about those. And I think short stories are really good for that. And I've gone on to do that in other settings with students and other church members through the years, with, you know, C.S. Lewis, Julian and Norwich, you know, just whatever seemed to be sparking interest. And so those things make a whole different dimension of church life come alive. So I kind of regret that I never put a priority on that, but it has certainly been a blessing in the ministry to have had those experiences.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to guess that you were pretty busy, Alex.
Well, we seem to always have a study going, but they were usually 6 to 8 weeks at a time, but they were great. I had the notion to just invite some friends to gather on Sunday morning, because we never had the time to do that because they usually have their own Sunday commitments. But in those first few weeks, when it seemed like we were just going to be in a short-term situation of being home on Sundays, I just invited some folks to a Zoom session and said, "Well, just here are the scriptures for this week. You bring something along with you. Bring a song, bring a story, bring a hymn, a poem, And that we called it Sunday Solace, and that that group continued and now for 8 weeks. So it's you know, that's what that was the natural impulse to bring bring a text and let's gather around it.
And it's wonderful to kind of think about those conversations being as organic as that, you know, and sort of unscripted and extemporaneous as that. That's lovely. What about you, Karen? Life reading in the life of a congregation.
Yeah, I've actually had to guard a little bit against having a reputation as sort of a book bully, always always pushing books on people when they, and if they're telling me about a problem, I'm like, I have this book. So I actually have tried to become, yeah, as we talked earlier, a better listener maybe sometimes. But, you know, when I think about this question, I have this memory from when Brent was in seminary years ago, and we recommended a movie called The Christmas Story. I don't know if you recall, about a young boy who wants a BB gun or something. And we recommended it to another student, so a Christian family, who then came back and were like shocked and appalled at our recommendation of The Christmas Story. And I tell you, that has stayed with me over the years. I was so embarrassed. And so I'm careful about what I recommend, actually. Mm. And maybe sometimes too careful. And I think there are classics that are awesome, which I think Galax has already mentioned, that I think are always safe and good. I have this like little voice in my head saying The Christmas Story when I go to recommend a book as the minister's wife, quite frankly. Mm. Having said that, I think there are great ways to encourage reading in the congregation. And I was actually thinking about articles. You know, books aren't the only show in town. So for example, the magazine I work with, at least one article, we include discussion questions for a small group. So I think, you know, and articles can be like a gateway to a book. So that's fun. And also just having these conversations via Zoom, there are a lot of authors who I think would love to show up in a church book club, for example. I think if we ask, often they will say yes. So we can actually, excite people about reading by introducing them right to the writers and the authors. I think that's a really cool thing. You know, well, we're all writers here. We love to talk about our work probably and, you know, relish those opportunities. So I really like that idea too. And again, just books that lead to scripture. I was thinking about Stephen Garber's book, Visions of Vocation, and I'm reading The Fabric of Faithfulness right now. There are such good, solid writers out there that we can recommend. So with all my little caveats there about caution, I think, you know, I do it. So,
well, we have mentioned Anne Lamott and Mary Carr, which may raise eyebrows in certain circles. But, you know, it's interesting, isn't it, that, you know, as Christians, because I feel like you both touched on this desire that we have for truth telling. Mm-hmm. And yet sometimes we're afraid to recommend books that really are incredibly truthful, but maybe telling truth from a perspective or just representing a perspective that we don't often hear in the church, you know? So I agree that it can be a bit treacherous, but also often very rewarding, you know, to have those kinds of conversations around books, because books are delving into meaningful questions, you know, and if it gets us beyond the weather, yes, and goodness, in this season, if it gets us beyond COVID-19, then let's talk about books.
And there are, you know, things we can say, right? We can say, I don't agree with everything in this book.
Right.
And you may not either, or this parts of this might make you feel uncomfortable, but I think it's worth it. So there's all kinds of ways we can do it. And I was thinking about fiction as well. One author I've recommended freely and widely recently is Sharon Garlow Brown and her Sensible Shoes series of novels, which I discovered again at the Festival of Faith and Writing. And, you know, I was a little leery of what I perceived to be Christian fiction for women sometimes. But I opened the book and I loved it, and I've just recommended it in every church we've been in since, and people love it. So there are those great books that come along that you just can't wait for people to read. And that's my
book bully self again.
Yeah, well, that reminds me of folks like somebody else that I discovered, partly, I think it was through the Festival of Faith and Writing, but Catherine James is a Christian writer. Yes. Who wrote her first book was a fiction book, Can You See?
Yes.
Can You See Anything Now? But what attracted me to it was that, unlike a lot of Christian fiction, it was not afraid to go into hard places and predict and depict a very, somewhat rough picture of the realities of the lives of the people and the characters. Mm-hmm. And just recently, she's published a memoir about her son's struggles with opioid addiction, and mm-hmm. Called A Song for Orion. And again, it's gritty, but it's just full of faith. And I would want anybody to experience that.
Oh, that memoir is beautiful.
It is.
So incredibly poignant and frank and honest, you know, as a parent's perspective, watching her son struggle with addiction. Such a wonderful book. I think perfect for any person who, I mean, honestly, even a wonderful book in this time, because it's about a book about facing loss of control. You know, I mean, when you're a parent and your child struggles with addiction, you obviously don't have any control. And that's how we're all feeling at this time. So I'm so glad you mentioned that, Alex. I really appreciated her book. One, as we kind of close our conversation, think about one book that you'd recommend to yourself, maybe a book or maybe an author that you'd recommend to yourself at the you wish maybe you had been reading at the beginning of your life in ministry. Who would that be? Karen, maybe we'll start with you this time.
Very difficult to narrow that down. So,
I know.
Of course, I'm going to take liberties. Frederick Buechner, his memoir work, I absolutely loved it. Again, with the double lenses here of reader, writer, again, finding truth beautifully told. So I would love to have found him earlier. And now I'm going to do a time travel trick and pick a book that wasn't written back then.
Okay, you're allowed.
Okay, thank you. Kate Bowler, Everything Happens for a Reason, and Other Lies I've Loved. And I will say again, for the same reason, that beautifully written, a beautifully written, painfully honest memoir that actually would have helped me be present with people in a better way. I would have said less, fewer stupid things had I read Kate's work before. But again, you know, reader, writer lens, like just so wonderfully presented and so helpful. So those are my choices.
Oh, wonderful. I love those. Alex.
Well, I've already mentioned two of the three that came to mind when I saw that question. And that, I mean, Annie Dillard, I said, was part of my entry into ministry, but I really didn't know anything of her beyond that one story for a long time. And just recently I picked up The Abundance, which is the collection of her essays from a lot of sources. And I wish I'd had that book, because I read it slow. I know Chris is big on slow reading, and I think that's one of those. She's an author who you really appreciate even more if you go through her work slowly. And so I admire her ability to look even at very difficult things and to see something deep and meaningful and transcendent in it. And the way that she writes is so beautiful. I keep thinking about the line from her story, A Dear Providencia, where she talks about looking at a newspaper clipping that's on her mirror every morning of a man who'd been burned over most of his body twice, and him just wondering at the meaning of all that suffering. And her line as she looks at it is, "This is the big time here, every moment of it." And that's a poetic sensibility I want to keep with me, that, you know, this is the big time, every moment of it. So I wish I think that's the kind of thing I'd want to hold on to, along with Mary Carr's Liar's Club and maybe Fleming Rutledge's The Crucifixion. So.
These are all so wonderful. I feel like part of the gold of the ERB podcast is the show notes, you know, and just having this amazing list of books to peruse and to check out. And some of the books that you guys have mentioned I've read, and others I haven't. I haven't read that collection of essays by Dillard. In fact, I feel like I haven't read enough of Dillard. And she's a person that, as a writer, you know, you constantly want to return to, because her prose is so exquisite. So it has been such a wonderful conversation with you guys. I love talking to readers. You know, kinds of conversations are fantastic. So Karen Stiller, again, is the author of The Minister's Wife. Karen, is it released officially, or is it soon
to release? It is officially released. It is out there in the world. So that's fun. Yeah.
Good. So as Karen mentioned, you can be in contact with her and, you know, host a book conversation about about her memoir. And Alex is the author of a couple of books, and your site is so wonderful, Alex, as you mentioned, alexjoyner.com, because you have so many books that you review there and also so many lovely poems that you share with readers. So I would commend that to our listeners as well. Thank you so much for joining me today in this conversation.
Thanks, Jen. Thanks, really, Alex.
If you enjoyed this conversation and you would like to learn more, please visit our website, englewoodreview.org, where you'll find plenty of book reviews, reading lists, and author interviews. And of course, you can subscribe to this podcast through your favorite podcast provider and share it with your friends. Thank you again for listening. Here's to energizing reading today.